You're listening to Bison Report Radio.
It's going to be interesting to see how Richmond wants to play this in terms of what he does. If he does want to go out and try to get some immediate help there.
The man, the myth, the legend, Greg Menard, rushing the passer from his right end position as a senior, and I think a legitimate National Defensive Player of the Year candidate.
You're listening to Bison Report Radio from Scout.com. Here's your host, Ryan Burns and Ross Uglum.
And welcome back to another episode of the BisonReport.com radio podcast. I am your host, Ryan Burns, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Ross Uglum. Ross, I know it's been a few days since we last spoke, but how excited are you to talk a little bit of Bison defense?
Excited. Less excited, of course, with the first thing we'll talk about, and that's the Greg Menard ACL injury. I think that's kind of the dark cloud that looms over this season and the potential of this defense. But with Nick DeLuca back and with the potential for Jabril Cox to be a part of things, there's a lot of things to be excited about for the Code Green Bison D.
So let's start with that defensive line. And as Ross alluded to, we have to start with the A topic, and that is the unfortunate injury to star defensive end and star pass rusher Greg Menard, out for the season with a torn ACL. So when you heard the news, Ross, how quickly did you drop to the floor and start to get in the fetal position?
Well, it kind of came in slowly.
If you can't tell by the inflection in Ross's voice, I think he's pretty depressed right now.
Well, it came in slowly. I was made aware of it, or made aware of the rumor in a group text message. Tried to confirm. Was told that they are waiting for the swelling to come down, and the next day he was announced out for the season via press release from the university. So big blow. I mean, there are no other proven pass rushers on the team. Ambrosius graduated. Tangway is coming off of an ACL and was a defensive tackle anyway. They don't bring back a lot of sacks after Menard was knocked out for the year. So it'll be interesting. I mean, it'll definitely be interesting. I'm gonna try and get a chance to speak to somebody on the defensive staff and just kind of talk about how they're going to generate pass rush, or if they're going to have to scheme it, or maybe just do a little research myself and look at some of the blitz calls from last season. But there's going to have to be some manufacturing of some pass rush. At the same time, it's exciting. I mean, they're going to be able to use Stanley Jones. They're going to be able to use Caleb Butler. They're going to be able to use both Tuskas. There is a group of at least four defensive ends to be excited about, but they're going to have to grow up. They're going to have to grow up fast and be able to use the technique and flexibility and speed that it requires to rush the quarterback, because you can't be bringing 5 and 6 all the time. They are eventually going to have to be able to rush the passer with four.
When you look at Greg's production last season, again, he is one of the best to come through in many years as a pass rusher at NDSU. 15 tackles for loss and 11 sacks, and that's with teams scheming towards him. So I know that it's a pretty open-ended question right now. You were kind of addressing it as you were talking there, but how do you replace Greg Menard as a pass rusher? Is it going to be a combination of players? Is it going to be a combination of different stunts, different blitzes, different things schematically? Because as you said, NDSU is going to need to get home on the pass rusher, and Greg was their best option to do so, especially now that I don't believe there's any more Brad Ambrosius.
Right, and that's the issue that you are faced with at this time. Do you blitz? Or do you trust the Tuskas, Stanley Jones, and Caleb Butler to get there? Because you've moved Cole Karch inside. He's now an interior pass rusher at 6'4 and 262 pounds. That's what Karch is going to do. Caleb Butler is really more of an interior pass rusher. So you're left with three guys, Derek and Jared Tuska and Stanley Jones. They are kids from the Dakotas. Good athletes, but guys that you would maybe feel better about rushing the passer, not necessarily up the middle, but with a bull rush, or rushing the passer as the secondary guy to somebody else. You feel way better about them run defending and setting the edge and maintaining gap control. But they're going to have to get juice, and maybe they can find some juice in Justice Kelly as a situational pass rusher. Maybe they can find juice in even Jabril Cox as a situational pass rusher. But if they cannot get consistent edge rush from the Tusker brothers and Stanley Jones because of their desire to usually use Caleb Butler and Cole Karch inside to rush with Nate Tangway, they're going to have to blitz. And that's fine because DeLuca's a good blitzer. You have to believe that Jabril Cox is going to be an okay blitzer. I even think Chris Board, if he maybe gets a little bit more flexible, would be able to bend around the edge and bring a little bit of pass rush just because of his strength and his speed. But you have to be able to bend. You have to be able to get around that tackle because the quarterback's not going to just keep dropping. Eventually he's going to sit in a pocket, and you got to be able to bend around that edge.
We talked a lot about the outside of the defensive line. So let's talk a little bit about the interior. Guys like Nate Tangway, as you mentioned, Grant Morgan, Blake Williams come to mind as well. So when you look at the interior of the defensive line for the Bison, what are your expectations for 2017 like?
Well, they're sky high. I think that because Tangway is returning, because he was hurt last year, this group is incredibly deep. You have Aaron Steidel, who will start alongside Tangway, who now is basically a three-year starter. He's going to play next to Tangway. And then there's tremendous depth. Blake Williams is tremendous depth. Grant Morgan is tremendous depth, another senior. Jack Darnell had to play a little bit last year. They don't even have to play Quinn Allo or Matt Beagler if they don't want to, as freshmen that have already redshirted, because they can also use, like we mentioned, Cole Karch and Caleb Butler to rush the passer. They have a legitimate 5- or 6-man rotation of guys who had meaningful playoff snaps at some point in their careers. So if there is a saving grace to Greg Menard being injured, it's that they're going to be bringing the pain from the interior, and that is the most disruptive thing a defense can do, is interior pressure, especially if it's not from the blitz. If you just have two defensive tackles that are collapsing centers and guards into the lap of a quarterback, it creates huge problems for what an offense is trying to do. And these guys are good enough, hopefully, to do that on a consistent basis.
And the final name I really want to touch on here is one that's been getting a lot of run in the media of late, and that's Spencer Wagey, someone from South Dakota, signed last class, I think was the best player in South Dakota. There's been a lot of talk about him getting some run now, especially with the Greg Menard injury. So do you think that Spencer could be a guy that could come in and play from day one? And if that's a yes, what do you think the expectations should be for a true freshman?
I've been told by more than one source that Spencer Wagey was a miss by the Big Ten and Big 12 schools in the area.
Aren't the first person to say that as well. I've had a few college coaches say that as well.
That Spencer Wagey was a miss by the Minnesotas, the Iowas, the Iowa States. And he is ahead of Tanner Sunt and Logan McCormick, without question at this point. He is the candidate to have, I would say, if I ranked the entire freshman class, he would be the number one candidate to not have a redshirt used this season. I had the chance to talk to Nick DeLuca right after the injury to Greg Menard, and he couldn't remember Spencer Wagey's last name, which was kind of a funny moment in the interview, but he did certainly remember that Wagey was the young pass rusher to pay attention to. And specifically, if he can provide juice, if he can provide pass rush, you're going to potentially see Wagey, like Greg Menard and Brad Ambrosius before him, as that fifth defensive end. Or really, if you count Caleb Butler as an interior pass rusher, he's going to be that fourth defensive end in the rotation. I would maybe doubt that he plays against Mississippi Valley State, but then they're going to have a real serious discussion about lifting his red shirt and potentially moving into the 2017 roster.
How is it that NODAC insurance agents can answer all of your questions? When you focus on North Dakota, you know more. We don't have to respond to hurricanes in Florida, which makes it easier to respond to hailstorms and fender benders in Fargo. Hi, I'm Ross Ugly, your NODAC insurance company agent. I'm here in Fargo, which means the answers that give you peace of mind are right in front of you. Answers come easy with NODAC insurance. Call me at 701-532-0891 to get the answers to your insurance questions today.
All right, now let's move on to the linebacker position. I think you covered it pretty well in your summer scout piece on thebisonreport.com. The plan for last year was that Nick DeLuca, MJ Stumpton, Pierre G. Tucker would have all played extremely well and graduated together. Well, that's just not how things went, and obviously Nick DeLuca went out with a season-ending injury. Well, he's back now. So that is the headliner, Nick DeLuca 2017, coming off a season-ending injury from last year. What are your expectations for Mr. DeLuca, and do you think the NFL is still a real possibility for him?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I think he's probably going to end up being towards the top of his class at the off-the-ball linebacker position. I think in the NFL he could play Mike, he could play Will. Just because of his athleticism, you wouldn't probably waste him at Sam, but a 3-4 team will have him play inside linebacker. A 4-3 team will have him play either of those other two positions. He's going to be up there because he is so fluid in coverage, because he is 6'3", 250. There will be questions, of course, about a level of competition, as there always are with FCS products, but DeLuca did not have what I would call a lower body structural injury. It was a shoulder thing. And when you don't have a lower body structural injury, it means that your 40 time didn't get slower, your three-cone time didn't get slower, your vertical jump didn't get shorter. All of the explosive athletic things that you were able to do before your injury, you're still going to be able to do, A, and B, improve upon in the pre-draft process. So I think, depending on testing numbers, DeLuca is going to be anywhere from a second to a fifth-round pick, much in the same way that Kyle Emanuel was.
Matt Plank is another guy you're expecting to start for the Bison at Mike linebacker. You look at his statistics from last season, the third leading tackler on the roster, 76 total tackles, 5.5 for loss. So what are your expectations for Mr. Plank heading into 2017?
Yep, Plank really made them make this base move to Will. His limitations, though, I think will lead NDSU to rotating their back seven instead of just rotating their back four from a nickel perspective, even a dime perspective. I think in a passing situation like they did when Grant Olsen was and to say that Plank has limitations is not to be disrespectful, because Grant Olsen is one of the best linebackers to ever play at North Dakota State, and he came off the field in obvious passing situations. So I think you're going to see a lot of flip-flopping, but Plank is going to play Mike, DeLuca will play Will, and they'll sort of allow Chris Board to freelance like Pierre G. Tucker at that Sam position a little bit more maybe than the assignments that Matt and that Nickel have. But Plank played well enough last year when DeLuca went down that it really demanded the fifth-year senior be a part of things and be a major part of who's going to get snaps this season. I think if you're talking about a 70-snap game, he's probably going to get 35, because they're probably going to, you know, most teams are going to be in that spread, and half the time he's going to be off the field. But on early downs to try and set up second and nines and second and eights, he's going to be at that Mike position, and I think that's going to suit his talents very well.
Maybe it's because the hype train has been out of control on Jabril Cox since he initially stepped on campus, but all we've heard is positive things about how much freak he's going to be on this NDSU defense. So I'm a little bit surprised that you do still have Chris Board above him at that final linebacker spot. Do you think it's going to be a lot more Chris Board than Jabril Cox? Do you think they're going to rotate? Do you foresee Cox surpassing him as the season goes on? Or what are your expectations for that Sam position?
Well, I think there's a real chance that they just have a pass group and a run group. I mean, I really think you could see the linebackers that they're going to use be Cox, Jordheim, and DeLuca. DeLuca being the only linebacker that never comes off the field. I think, and this really speaks to his athleticism, I think that
they are legitimately talking about using Jabril at nickel, playing that big nickel that they used to play with two safeties and a linebacker. But he's so fluid in coverage that they might play him as the inside corner and have him cover slot receivers like Travis Beck used to do. He is a lot bigger than Travis Beck ever was, and it's going to, you know, his length next to DeLuca's length is really going to shorten those passing lanes. But this is a guy that's going to get on the field and really going to get on the field in money downs. Chris Board is built like an absolute refrigerator and should be the Sam linebacker against the run. He's a punishing hitter. I have no problem with them using him over Jabril Cox on run downs, especially if they're going to use Jabril in coverage and as a blitzer.
So when you look at this unit as a whole, Nick DeLuca, Matt Plank, Chris Board, Jabril Cox, Dan Marlett, and Levi Jordheim, upgrade about the same, downgrade from 2016. I would imagine because Nick DeLuca is back, you're thinking this is a group that's going to take another step in the positive direction, but what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it's got to take a step up, I think, from the group that ended the season, not from the group that started the season. Stumpf, Tucker, and DeLuca will not probably get the historical significance that the Beck, Olsen, Littlejohn, or Mays, Humber, Marish groups got because they played together for such a short time. But that's a really talented group, and I mean really talented. So from where they started last season, this group won't be to that level. But from the Plank, Tucker, Stumpf group, because DeLuca, as a fifth-year senior, really has a chance to dominate, they have a chance to, I think, yeah, be an improvement from the end of last season.
So let's get to our final position that we'll break down, and that is the defensive backs. And you have to start with the two preseason all-conference guys in terms of Trey Dempsey and maybe one of the most underrated players on the Bison interwebs, and that's Robbie Grimsley. So when you look at Grimsley, when you look at Trey Dempsey, how excited about this Bison secondary are you?
Well, it's just about Dempsey. It's just about Grimsley really improving his tackling. I've mentioned, people talk so fondly about Craig Dahl and Colton Hegel, and they should. They're both very good players, but they now combined have as many interceptions as Robbie Grimsley does, and Robbie Grimsley will play probably 28 or 30 more games for North Dakota State. He's a free safety playing strong safety. That's what they have right now. They have a cornerback convert playing free safety, and they have a free safety convert playing strong safety. And his tackling has not been up to the level of the basically flying linebackers that played the position before him. Colton Hegel specifically, people talk about that Georgia Southern game that he played with a cast and basically won the game for North Dakota State, shutting down that triple option with more than one guy who ended up in the NFL in that backfield. I just think that expectations for what actually make a good player maybe aren't realistic, and his coverage abilities and his playmaking abilities aren't as respected as they should be, because it's easy for the novice fan to see a missed tackle and complain about it. With that said, Grimsley and Dempsey have a chance to really get to that Dudzik Hegel, Shomer Dahl level, because Trey is an All-American going into his senior year, and Robbie is a third-year starter as a true junior. When you are able to play and communicate and diagnose things as a tandem for that many snaps, things start to become second nature. Offensive packages start to get recognized, and the back end really seems to get organized in a way that's very advantageous for the defense. Trey Dempsey, great player, capable of playing man, capable of playing single high, certainly capable of playing cover two, has excellent ball skills. Those come from his time as a cornerback, and even though he is the size of an average cornerback, he is a decent enough hitter, and I think really a guy that NFL teams are going to have to pay attention to as a safety options in the late round or the very early proceedings of college free agency in 2018.
Another Bison secondary player I know you're extremely high on is Jalen Allison, someone that you think has a chance to reach potentially, again, this is potentially, he's going to have to have the breakout season, but the level of guys like C.J. Smith and Marcus Williams. So why are you so particularly high on Jalen Allison?
Well, because the head coach is the D-backs coach, and he's high on – or the head coach is a D-backs coach, and he is high on Jalen Allison. And the D-backs coach is high on Jalen Allison. And the film proves out that Jalen Allison is that talented. But he needs to take that step. This is a redshirt junior year. He had to be the man as a sophomore. Well, he's the man now, and he's a junior. He's an upperclassman. He needs to be a star. And for the defense to take an appreciable level forward, it's not just going to come from the return of Nick DeLuca. They're going to have to cover back there. They really are. They're going to have to cover back there because there's going to have to be pass rush generated, and there are going to be plays when NDSU brings four that they're not going to get home. Now, that's the case no matter how good you are. But the percentage of plays or the frequency of plays in which they have the chance of struggling up front are higher this year. I mean, that's just the way that it is. Without Greg Menard and with no proven pass rush behind him, unless somebody has some sort of rapid development, these DBs are going to have to cover, and they're going to have to cover for maybe longer than they're completely comfortable with.
Let's talk about the other two starters that you have in your projected 2017 secondary. That's Darren Kelly, the junior college transfer into NDSU, and then finally Jalen Wimbush. What are expectations like for both Darren Kelly going? I believe he's going. Darren Kelly has 1 year left, Ross, or does he have two?
Either way,
Darren Kelly, Jalen Wimbush, and especially Dom Davis, who you have as the backup at both positions. What are your expectations for those final two members of the secondary?
Well, Dom Davis is a guy definitely to be excited about. They're going to move him out to cornerback. He played nickel last year. They're going to get him into that outside mentality where he has the boundary as another defender, where he has outside corner responsibilities, and he's not constantly worrying about what he has to do from a nickel perspective. He is going to have a battle with Jalen Wimbush, who played there a season ago, because they are probably going to use that big nickel, because they are going to utilize different types of players, I think, in the defensive backfield at the nickel spot. They might use Robbie Grimsley and bring in Jackson Brown as a free safety. They might just have Big Jabril out there. They might use Darren Kelly. Darren Kelly is just like a lot of like Quentin McCoy, for example. It takes guys a year that come in from other programs to learn this NDSU defensive system. Everybody was all excited about Darren Kelly last year. He was in the mix and ultimately was not able to contribute in a meaningful way on defense. And that has a chance of changing because of that full second offseason understanding what is going on in that defensive backfield. So he's going to get a chance to play.
Final two guys I think to note here are Marquise Bridges and along with Jackson Brown. Two guys I believe you're probably expecting more on special teams about, more than on defense, but solid depth guys for 2017.
Yeah, there's lots of depth in the defensive backfield, though. That has to do, obviously, with nobody graduating. I mean, that's just how math works, but they are going to be deep. Eric Bachmeier is a name at strong safety. James Hendricks is another guy. The quarterback convert. I've always said, just get me QBs. Get me guys that used to play QB. They're the smartest guys on the field. Carlton Littlejohn was that. I believe Jabril Cox is that. James Hendricks is that. Guys that played QB in high school and even obviously in college, they just bring that much more to the table. And I think you've got to be excited about the potential of the depth guys. Jackson Brown is an incredibly explosive athlete, and you absolutely can see that when he is when he's flying down the field on kick coverage specifically.
So same question as we've asked at the end of each one of these positional breakdowns, upgrade about the same or downgrade. What are your thoughts about this defensive back core? I'm assuming upgrade, considering it seems like Ross is extremely optimistic about each one of these groups heading into the 2017 season?
I'll call it level. I think, you know what, that's not right. There's got to be an upgrade. There have to be from year to year improvements because they bring the whole group back. Darren Kelly is a year further into the program. I'm going to go with upgrade.
Care to expand on that anymore? Or are we just going to say upgrade?
I'm just going to say upgrade. I think it's difficult to expand on it because literally everybody that was part of the plan last year is back. There aren't too many new bodies to think of. The freshmen are going to redshirt. The guys coming back have stuff on film already.
Other insurance companies try to cover the entire country. We think there's plenty of ground to cover right here with homes, autos, farms, and ranches. Nodak Insurance Company is focused on serving the people in the great state of North Dakota with agents who care and provide the answers you need to your doorstep. Hi, I'm Ross Uglum, your agent in Fargo. Call me today at 701-532-0891 and get the protection you need. Nodak Insurance, agents with answers.
All right, well, let's get into the non-conference schedule in terms of let's start to preview some things, and we'll have a full preview of Mississippi Valley State next week. But you look at the non-conference and the three games NDSU has. They round out the first 2 weeks of September, Mississippi Valley State at home on that Saturday of Labor Day weekend at 2:30. Then NDSU flies out to Washington to take on Eastern Washington on the road. Again, no Cooper Cup up there, but that's still a very good team. And then finally they round out. After a bye week on the 16th, on the 23rd, they come back home to take on Robert Morris. So I'm assuming you're not too worried about Mississippi Valley State, as am I. So let's look forward to this Eastern Washington game. The red turf out there at Washington is going to be quite an experience for those fans traveling out.
Without question. It's a big weekend. It's a big non-conference road game. I think the Bison secondary will certainly be pleased that Cooper Cup, Kendrick Bourne, and Shaq Hill are no longer out there. But anytime you go out and play in the Inferno, it's a challenge. And Gage Goodroot is a good player. I don't give him as much credit maybe as national guys do just because all three of those guys were legitimate NFL talents that he played with. And there are absolutely such things as receivers that make their quarterbacks better. And a lot of guys could have put up those numbers with the talent that Gubruta had around him. But he's still a good player. It's still a true road game, and it's going to be a test, and it's going to be a fun trip for Bison fans. I mean, a lot of them I've talked to are going to take the train. There's people making a road trip out of it. Montana and Idaho are beautiful parts of the country, and that's going to be a fun trip for those that decide to shoot out to Cheney.
Are you at all concerned about Robert Morris looking forward to that final non-conference game at home? Again, 2:30 start in Fargo. NDSU historically has been unbelievable at home, but does the East Coast team of Robert Morris give you any reason to pause?
Oh, probably not.
Speak it like it is, Ross.
Yeah, I mean, that's just reality.
All right, so I'm guessing that you're going to be predicting a 3-0 non-conference, or how do you see that Eastern Washington game playing out? Because as we discussed on our season preview with the Eastern Washington beat writer, he thinks that the Eagles are going to come away with a 34-30 victory. I'd imagine the spread's going to be pretty close. So can NDSU head out to the Inferno and get the W, or what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I don't. That's really optimistic for them to lose that many guys and beat an NDSU team that just doesn't lose road games. NDSU's road winning percentage, it really defies the logic of football, but it's there. This team takes a business mentality out to mentality out to other people's houses and usually comes away with a victory. And it doesn't matter if it's Iowa or Western Illinois or Eastern Washington. And you have to remember what happened the last time these guys were out in Cheney and the injustice that was done to them that basically changed the changed what would have been 6-5 and started the NDSU dynasty a year later. I
don't give Eastern Washington much of a chance in that game.
So let's preview a little bit of – let's split the conference in four-game stretches. You have Missouri State at home. Again, not expecting a lot from Missouri State. Then the Bison head on the road for two October road games at Indiana State and Youngstown State before coming home to take on Western Illinois. I'm guessing if I was you, I would be the most concerned about that Youngstown State game. Youngstown State 6-2 in conference last year. And more importantly, they were 8-0 at home last year as well. So when you look at those four games, Ross, Missouri State at home, Western Illinois at home, and then on the road against Indiana State and Youngstown State, which of those give you the most reason to think that that's going to be quite a tough game for this Bison squad?
I think there's no question about that. Valley football is always difficult. Kicking off the season the way that they have. I mean, the whole slate, it's a difficult slate on the conference side of things because the teams that you have to think are going to be fighting with NDSU at the top are road games. It starts off with the trip to Youngstown State and the trip to Brookings that's coming down the road is no joke either.
So what are your predictions in terms of, again, Missouri State and Western Illinois at home, Indiana State, Youngstown State on the road? Is NDSU 7-0 coming into that Northern Iowa game, or do you think they might potentially be dropping a game to, say, a Youngstown State?
Well, I think they'll drop a game in conference because they always do. But I actually think they'll win the game in Brookings. So I'll say that they drop one of those preceding games.
So the final four games of the regular season go as follows: the home against Northern Iowa, and then a very tough game against South Dakota State on the road in Brookings before coming home to face South Dakota in the Harvest Bowl and Senior Day. Then they round out their conference schedule against Illinois State. So not exactly the easiest way to end the season.
No, it's a tough close. There's no question about it. Senior Day is not going to be easy. That trip to Brookings isn't going to be easy. What I will say about the trip to Brookings is this, though. That Jackrabbit offense is actually probably a better issue to deal with in late November than it is in the Fargo Dome. Outside in Brookings, there really isn't that much of a home field advantage, especially with the way that NDSU travels. They're going to be able to ground South Dakota State. The way that they're going to defend Goddard with DeLuca and the way that hopefully Allison lines up with Winicky, maybe they can have Jabril Cox chase Taryn Christian all over the place. The point is that the high-flying offense that is going to define South Dakota State's success and, frankly, is responsible for their number three preseason ranking is not going to work as well when it's 23 degrees on November 15th as it would in a 72 degree Fargo Dome with air conditioning.
So let's get to your keys of this season. So how about two keys for the offense in terms of how are they going to be able to make sure that NDSU has another double digit win season heading into the playoffs?
I have a one loss season as my prediction. I think
we'll get there. But what I mean, offensively, what do you think are the keys for this offense to really make sure that they're always in drive and never stalling out?
Exactly what they talked about from a completion percentage standpoint. Hitting those benchmarks, being more efficient throwing the ball, extending drives on third down, and taking care of the football. That touchdown to interception. It's not that they turned the ball over a ton last year, but they need to be able to not make the big mistake and convert on third and fourth down, keep the chains moving through the air, be a little bit more explosive, because I'm not sure that the way that they were able to grind last year is going to be available to them without a guy like King Frazier and without huge right tackle, right guard guys like Landon Leckler and Jack Plankers. So the ability to move the ball through the air is going to be a big deal for this club.
How about the defensive side of the ball? What are the keys for this defense to really maintain, you know, that – I mean, it's been when you look at the statistics, this NDSU defense has been top five in the FCS for quite a few years now. What are the keys for them in terms of to hold that ranking without Greg Menard?
Defending the pass. Simple as that. I mean, they're going to have to rush the passer, and they're going to have to cover receivers. And one of those two things is going to have to be good enough. They're either going to have to be good enough on the back end to deal with a pass rush that misses Greg, or they're going to have to enjoy the development of Karch and Butler as interior pass rushers and the development of Stanley Jones and the Tuska brothers as players and their ability to get after the quarterback. Because if both of those things are subpar, they're not going to survive the season, because they're going to run into, whether it's Brian Shore with James Madison or Gubrud or Taryn Christian, they're going to run into a quarterback that is just too good to sit in the pocket all day.
So let's get to that Ross Uglum / Beiser Report official record prediction. Again, we kind of went through it as we were breaking down the conference and non-conference schedule, but Mississippi State, Eastern Washington, Robert Morris. Ross, I'm guessing you do have NDSU 3-0, correct?
Yeah, yep.
And then how about just in general here as we look forward, 11 total games for NDSU as they hopefully head into the playoffs. What is your record prediction for this Bison 2017 squad?
I think they'll be a one-loss team. I believe this is an 11-game year, which would put them at 10-1 for the regular season.
Correct. Three non-conference, eight conference games, so they're 10-1 heading into postseason play. What would be your postseason prediction? Again, do you think this is another year that it could potentially end in Frisco, or do you think that this NDSU squad is going to have to continue to elevate themselves to get in that national championship discussion?
The Menard injury made me think about it, certainly, but just the general ability of the program to overcome things like that over the course of the past few seasons, or the past few years, really, I think they'll be fine. I think they'll win another championship. This is a big legacy year. It's big for Coach Kleiman because he has. It's certainly arguable that he has won championships with Coach Bowles' recruits and not his own. And it's certainly an issue of legacy for Easton Stick. Whether or not you like it, and I hate it, quarterbacks are largely credited with the wins and losses of their football teams. And at this point in time, Easton Stick has not won a national title. Carson Wentz won the national title. Easton Stick got them there. But this is a big deal for NDSU to win with Coach Kleiman's team being 100% Coach Kleiman's team, and with Easton Stick at quarterback. So I think this will be the sixth title in 7 years for the Bison. And unless something else catastrophic happens, I'm probably not going to move off of that thought, because I just don't think that they're going to find a way to lose two or three games and get knocked out of the Fargo Dome. And with the aura of invincibility gone, there will be absolutely no complacency come playoff time.
Sounds good to me. Anything further to add on this defensive and / schedule outlook before we wrap things up here, Ross?
Nope.
Sounds good to me. So, again, we thank you guys for listening. If you want to help out and support Ross and I on the Beiser Report, please head on over to thebeiserreport.com. Subscribe. It is $4.95 a month, folks. It's a cup of coffee. Again, instead of getting a cup of coffee tomorrow morning, head on over to the Beiser Report. Check out all the different previews we have going up. Ross is starting to look more in depth at the offense and defense. You know, we have all the recruiting news you want as well. As on the basketball side of things, Coach Richmond is starting to set some official visitors with his top targets for the 2018 class as well. Also, please subscribe and rate and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever podcasting form you found us at. And when you do head to that first game against Mississippi Valley State, which we will be back next week to preview, if you enjoy the podcast, tell the people to the left and the right of you about it. It really helps us tremendously. So for Ross, for myself, we thank you guys for listening. Go Bison.